let's say in 10 minutes, we're done with the interview and you go to pick up the water bottle. Now, let's say you put your back out doing it. You're 22, so that's unlikely.
my back has its problems every now and then. It's fair share of problems, so it's possible.
Well, so let's say you put your back out and you have to go take a trip to the doctor that wasn't planned. Okay?
Yeah.
Let's say on your way into the doctor, somebody sneezes on you and gives you some disease that you wouldn't have otherwise had. You have no protection against it, and you end up, you know, I'm being really worst case scenario here, dead. See, I love how you're picking it up now to make sure.
Yeah. See, you got me thinking. I was like, man, I don't want that happen. I'm picking it up right now.
Okay, so
we'll do.
Sweet. So, guys, I'm here with Josh Westbrook. I know him as the secular and atheist link on Instagram. He sort of kept on popping up on my feed, and I'd be like, oh, I like that. That's really funny. I like that. That's really funny. It was just some really great memes. And we've chatted since, and I asked him to come on and just chat with me today. So how's it going, Josh? How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Keith? I'm glad to be here. I did the same thing with you. I, you know, noticed that you were liking some of my stuff, and every now and then it just comes up on my notification. I don't get as many likes as you would think, so it's kind of easy to, you know, when somebody goes through and re-likes all my stuff to say, hey, what's this? You know, I noticed that you had posted some stuff too, and you know, had your own show and whatnot. And I thought, you know, that was really interesting. So I thought I'd give you a follow, watch some of your videos that you did, some of your podcasts. Just thought it would be interesting to see what we could discuss something today as well.
It's funny because from where I'm from in Northern Ireland, being an atheist is just like going to the coffee shop. I feel like there's the same here. It's just being pushed underground more because people like politicians and all these guys, they're also super openly, exaggeratedly so pretending, at least for some of them, for sure, to be religious. The scary ones are the ones doing it for real, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, the ones who really think God's talking to them. Josh, tell me a bit about yourself. Like, how old are you? Where, well, as much as you're willing to say, of course, on a podcast, but where do you live? What do you do? Let's start there.
Well, I actually don't live too far away from you. You said that you live in the Chicago area right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I live about four or five hours south in a city called St. Louis.
Oh.
And yeah. And so I'm not originally from here. I'm actually from a small town about 2 hours south of here. It's not very secular down there. It's Southern Missouri. It's everybody is all about the whole God thing. So I kind of had to be really secretive about my skepticism and whatnot. I didn't really believe in God in any huge sense until, except for like maybe when I was a little kid, until I was about 10 or 11, I was always questioning things, you know, like Santa Claus and whatever else when I was a kid. I was like, there's no way. No, there's no, you know. Then eventually I got to that point with God. And I think for a lot of people, that's a lot of times it's going to be the last thing that they're going to question because the adults around them don't believe in Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny or whatever. But a lot of them do believe in God. And so when they, you know, turn 10 or 11 and their parents say, hey, by the way, there's no Santa Claus, they're going to trust what their parents say. They're not going to do the same thing for God, though, because most of their parents aren't going to tell them that. They're going to say, oh, yeah, Jesus is real, and talking serpents are real, too. I basically started questioning that, and I grew up in a pretty secular household, so I was lucky. I know a lot of people aren't as lucky. I started watching shows when I was, like, 11, like How the Universe Works. A lot of these science-y shows, watching science-y videos on YouTube and whatnot, and saying, wow, this is a lot more rational explanation for origin of life and the origin of the universe. I came across videos, like you said, from the atheist community of Austin, like The Atheist Experience, for example, and YouTubers like The Amazing Atheist. It really just got me, I just concurred a lot more with what they had to say than what some of the dogma of Christianity, which is what I grew up around, obviously, had to say. To this day, I'll be at work and I'll have my headphone and I'm listening to archived episodes of The Atheist Experience. Before going into that, I was kind of a, I knew I was an atheist, but I didn't exactly know what atheism was. I didn't know what agnosticism was either. I would say, you know, there was a point in time there where I was like, I'm a little kid, oh, I'm a Christian. Oh, you know, I think I'm an agnostic, which isn't even a thing. There's no middle ground. You either believe or you don't. I didn't realize that until years later. And so now I know that I'm an agnostic atheist. And
I think most people don't even realize that at any point in their lives, they don't realize there's an entire field called the laws of logic, and most people don't even get there. So they don't understand when I tell them, like, being an atheist is different from being an agnostic or a Gnostic. They're completely different fields. You can't choose what you believe. And I think people sometimes, if they don't understand even the basics in this, they don't understand that you cannot choose what you believe. You can become convinced of something, but it's not you that's choosing it, if that makes sense. Your brain is choosing it. It's that whole free will thing. Maybe we'll get into that today if we want to get super deep.
we can get into whatever you want. You're absolutely right. You can't choose what you can believe. You can choose to lie about what you believe, though. You can be forced to go to church and be around all your friends who believe and say, oh yeah, Jesus is the king and whatever else. You can't be convinced of a claim if you're not actually convinced. And that's where I was. It's nothing I could choose. I was never convinced. I was always a skeptic about everything. And I just haven't heard a good argument for why I should believe. And I think that's why most people are atheists.
Well, funny, you're 22. I pretty much haven't heard a good argument since I was 22. So, and even then, I haven't heard anything other than like, that's actually not a bad point. You know, that's about as far as it gets. But like, every time I ever think to myself, if there's ever a moment where I go, well, you know, I know I'm not a Pascal's wager guy. It's not like I'm going to just like fingers crossed and hope there's an afterlife and do, you know, and just assume there is type of a vibe. It's never been me. But anytime I ever get in some weird psychological, you know, zone where I'm thinking in that line, I just remind myself, yeah, but what about all the other hells and heavens that people believe have existed over all these centuries? And to believe that the only thing that would ever make me doubt anything would be the fear of actually dying. But then it's honesty that I know I'm not going anywhere, and it scares the shit out of me because I'm realistic about death. And so realism actually is quite a scary thing. But I actually, that's what I want to ask you about. As you said, your parents were reasonably secular. So, or did they have like kind of a wishy-washy kind of like, you know, well, we kind of believe in God, but we're not really like Bible following?
No, not even that. They were kind of always in the position where they just didn't really give a shit. I still don't really know today what my mother is. I know that she's not hardcore, Christian or anything. Both of my parents grew up in Christian households. Actually, my dad grew up in a Catholic household. But even then, with the extended family, yeah, they'll go to church every now and then or whatever. But there's no like insane, you know. So I think that probably over the generation, it would just get, you know, less and less hardcore into believing it. They told me to believe whatever I want, for sure. Like when I was a little kid, when I was like 5 or 6, I would look up at the clouds and say, hey, those look like, you know, or whatever stupid little thing I believed. And I would always get shit from my sister. Oh, yeah, or it could be condensation of the water cycle, blah, blah, blah. Stuff that I know now, but as a little kid, you don't. And my mother would be like, hey, just let him believe whatever he wants. But I was never forced to go to church or anything like that. And I was never indoctrinated. And that's why I'm able to be in this position I am now. And I didn't wrestle with doubts very much. You mentioned hell, for example. That was something that I also struggled with. I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm an atheist, but what if I'm wrong? I mean, one of the best points that Matt makes on the Atheist Experience is, how much time do you spend worrying about other hells? Probably not very much time. There's always going to be if you don't believe, there's going to be consequences in every religion, in every major religion. If you were an atheist in Iraq, first of all, you better not tell anybody that. But secondly, you would be afraid of going to Islamic hell. That's the same thing with growing up in America. If you don't believe in the Christian God, you're going to be afraid of going to the Christian hell. If there is really a hell, I think, you know, everybody should know about it. And it shouldn't be something that wasn't introduced into the Bible much later. If God really wanted us to stay away from hell, number one, he shouldn't send us there in the first place. And number two, he should make us very well aware of it first thing. It should be first page. Hey, by the way, there's this place called hell. You probably don't want to go there. If there really is a God and there really is a hell, it's his fault that I don't believe in him. And it's his fault for sending me there in the first place and not making me more aware that hell exists.
Yeah, it's a good point, because I always say that, like, if you believe in God and you believe he created everything, you have to believe he's this like, amazing God that can create stuff out of nothing and all like that. But he's the shittiest teacher in the world. He decides, you know what, let's go down in the Middle East and try to disseminate the information I want these people to understand about the most supposedly important thing they will ever need to know. It's the most obvious, you know, Bronze Age goat herder logic in the Bible, which is funny. Of course, it makes perfect sense when you read it from the perspective that that's who wrote it. So, of course, that's what the theology is going to be. That's what the morality is going to be based on. This, I mean, if you were a woman when the Bible was written, you were pretty much a third class citizen. You weren't even you know, you can't even say second class citizen just because it's not even an appropriate term.
And that still exists. I mean, there are America is a huge place, huge place. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of cults that exist. A lot of them we will never even know about. Most of these cults, if not all of them, treat women like they're very second class citizens. I was talking with some Mormons a few months ago. I met them at a Panera Bread or something. And they are still wearing these like dresses or whatever. They can't do certain things or whatever. I'm like, this is 2023. This is not 1823. Most of the time in America, if you're a Christian, you're just a Christian. Non-denominational, or you're Baptist, whatever. But you're still going to have the same rights. You can wear jeans. You can drive. You can do all this stuff. But there are cults that exist and where women are still second-class citizens, where people are and this is just in general Christianity, still defending Exodus 21, where it instructs you how to own slaves. This is the real harm that religion does. And most people don't realize that until either it's too late or never at all. And this is a huge problem. I mean, we have all of these things. We have the computer that we're on right now to talk to each other. We have automobiles. We have planes that can fly all over the world. We have all these great things that science has afforded us. And there are still people who will deny that, will deny science and say science is, you know, pish posh, and I'm just going to believe that it all just came out of existence, which is very ironic, by the way. I know I'm kind of getting off track, but they always say, well, the universe couldn't have just came from nothing, couldn't have just popped into nowhere. Is that not exactly what you're saying? In the beginning, God created the universe?
Yeah, and not only that, but literally he created it all from nothing. So you're not saying it, you're saying it couldn't have come from nothing unless a God did it. So therefore, two things. A, your God defeats the argument you're trying to postulate, which is nothing can come from nothing. So therefore, mm-hmm. God came from nothing as far as they're concerned. So there's, you know, that's a broken rule right there. And also that God created everything out of nothing. And isn't that just what you said couldn't happen? What are we missing here? It's a double lose, you know?
Yeah. If God can come from nothing, then the universe can come from nothing.
Yes. Plus, we've learned now in the last 20 years, we've learned in quantum physics that there isn't really anything known as nothing that we actually know of. Like when we think of nothing, we think of humans have no choice but to think of an empty room that's black with no light and has no air in it, essentially. Now we know about that whole idea of quantum locking, where like particles can be as instantly here and one can be transported to across the universe. And no matter what happens to this one, it happens to that one over there at exactly the same time, as if there's no space or time between them at all. There's so much stuff we don't yet know, which ironically is another argument religious people give as to against science. And we're like, no, just because everything we find out leaves 10 new things we don't understand doesn't mean that the thing we found out is any less awesome. Like, we're not going to someday go and fly outside the Earth and go, oh, shit, it's a triangle, you know? And, oh, look, it doesn't actually rotate at 23.5 degrees, and it isn't a circle, and, it, you know, and the sun really isn't, you know, 93 million miles away. Like, so tell me this, because we could do that all day long for the next 3 days, probably, is our top 100 or 200 ideas on what we don't like about religion. But did I ask you what you were doing as far as work goes, or studying, or?
Well, it's interesting. I actually, I'm just working at a grocery store right now. I did that. I just finished up. I was in community college for 3 years. Finally finished up in the summer. Didn't really major in anything. Just general studies. Just kind of using that as a foundation, just in case I ever want to go back. And I don't have to start from scratch. I've recently, I'm getting into aviation. I think I'm probably, might be a pilot or something. But plans can always change. Maybe I can do this in some form, or maybe, you know, whatever else. But, you know, I'm 22. I'm still young. I still have time to figure it out. So we'll kind of see how it all plays out, really.
It's not a bad place to be in, is not knowing what you want, you know. I mean, it's kind of lucky because I always knew I was going to be a musician from about 13, I guess, and most people don't have a clue. So Josh on his Instagram page posts a lot of, you know, memes, and they're you know, it can be anything from a funny thing to a serious thing or a quote from someone. It's basically it runs the gamut of, you know, from serious to funny. When and how did you decide to start this outward promotion of atheism on social media? And then how did it develop into what it is now?
That's funny. You may think I'm actually a bit of a fraud. This is not even originally my account. This was from another guy. His name was Andy. I know. And he ran it for years. He and I would message from time to time. We talk about whatever. And he basically one day says, I don't want to do it anymore. He essentially just gave it to me. I thought that I would kind of follow in his footsteps a little bit, kind of follow his format, add my own twist on it a little bit. And I can be a little bit more abrasive than he was, for sure. A lot of times I'll end up picking fights. I don't do that to be a dick. I really don't. I do that because Christianity is so shoved down everybody's throat that if you want to fight back, you've got to fight fire with fire a little bit. And so if you want to make a statement, you have got to be the one talking the loudest. If you want to be heard, you've got to be the one talking the loudest. Some people like it. Some people hate it. I get a lot of hate messages. Not that I'm complaining. I mean, it fuels me. Yeah. And then I also get a lot of messages from Christians who want to say, oh, Jesus is king. Someday you'll just realize that. It's been really rewarding. There have been people who like it and say, hey, this, you know, made my day. This is whatever. And there's people who I've had people reach out to me and say, you know, hey, I'm 15 years old. I'm an atheist. The rest of my parents are the rest of my family are hardcore Christians. I don't know how to come out or if I should or what I should say. And then I have to, you know, give them advice accordingly. It's definitely a big responsibility that I've taken on, but it's extremely rewarding too, because I actually have a genuine passion for this. You know, you talked about passions earlier. This is probably my number one passion right now. I like talking about, because it's a very important thing, isn't it? Religion. And because it's so ubiquitous in our society.
But yeah, I mean, I've been into this since I was 14, you know, like I started reading the Bible at 14 and learning about it and not from any religious sense, just like I wanted to know why this seemed so crazy to me and why people actually believed this as grown-ups. I waited till I kind of got myself in a position with my music and my career that's super solid. You know, this is how some people are, like me. We're not any worse or better than anybody else. But one thing we certainly won't do is persecute you or tell you you cannot do something, because I think you shouldn't. And honestly, we need more young voices like yourself. If this is something that you feel, you know, you want to pursue, like in a more open and being vocal, I say do it. And you never know, you could just as easily be the next, you know, Matt Dillahunt or whoever, you know, because you've obviously got the knowledge. So there's no reason why you couldn't. You know what I mean? I'm sure all of those people had. Speaking of memes, let me just ask you to see if I'll put you on the spot here and just tell me if you had to pick three of the memes on the page. Ooh. That just jump out to you as your like favorites, could you think of them?
I would say probably, well, the first one is the most popular one, the one that I pinned. It had to do about morality, something about a lot of Christians like to act like they have the moral high ground. They haven't really actually examined what the Bible has to say. We talk about Exodus 21, for example, there's that. I think in Exodus 22, it talks about burning witches. There might be another one, I don't know if it's in Exodus or it's somewhere else, where a father has the duty, if your son is a drunkard, to take him to the middle of town, proclaim that he's a drunkard, and then have everybody stone him to death. This is in the Bible that they say is the holy book. The good book is what they call it. I always like to think that my favorite one is the one that I've uploaded most recently, because I always like to try to top myself. And so the other one would probably be, there was this funny one where I went to somebody's page, one of these Jesus is Lord pages or whatever, and they said, Jesus is coming back. And I was on this big, you know, kind of had this black background. I said, well, could he hurry up? Because I'm throwing a party this weekend. And all I had to drink is water. And so, and that just came straight off the dome too. So those are number two. The third one is actually probably one that you wouldn't expect. It's actually a quote from the Bible. I like to give the Bible its props where necessary too, because I don't want people to think that I'm being unfair to them. It has to do with the four horsemen. It's something to do with name that set on them was death, and hell followed with them. There are a lot of things in the Bible that I think are really beautifully written. That was one of them. I like heavy metal and stuff. And so when I see stuff like that, I'm like, wow, that's actually really cool. And it got me, a lot of people liked it, and they actually said, oh yeah, no, there's a lot of cool things written in the Bible. I don't want to ever, you know, I don't want people to think like I'm being unfair or say like the entire book is bad. I just like to point out and say, hey, if you think the entire book is great, you're wrong. Look what it says here. Look what it says here. Look what it says here. Now, that's not to say that there's no God or that the entire book is wrong. I'm just saying you really need to reexamine where your moral code derives.
Well, I personally think wherever the Bible got things right, it got right by chance. You know, some stuff in the Sermon on the Mount and a few things that Jesus says here and there make sense, you know. But literally, it's counteracted by the go kill your child if they do X in the next sentence. One of the, you know, laws of logic and laws of sort of argument is that does somebody who says something true all the time, does it make it more likely that the next thing they say is true? In a colloquial sense, yes, like you probably can trust someone's opinion on something a little more. But at the end of the day, just because they said something that is kind of good in the Bible, obviously that's far outweighed by the fucking shit that's in there that would make your blood boil. So it's funny you said that earlier about women, because the two types of people that I consider that blows my mind that they're even religious at all are women and black people. Because black people, if anyone, were taken from a place that did not have Christianity, then forced to work for those people that did. And then through just simply being in the couple of generations down the line and not being able to be part of their own heritage anymore, took that on by themselves. They took on the religion of their oppressors. And then they not only took it on, but they basically took it on wholeheartedly even more than their oppressors and became so religious. And it sort of upsets me when I see black people who are religious, which most of them tend to be here in America. It's like, do you not understand how much of a slap in the face that is to you as a people? Like just the fact that you've bought into this thing because you were basically, you know, forced to work for these people that believed this. And then seeing for women, of course, you get plenty of religious women, but they don't realize if it wasn't for religion, they could be running the world right now. Anything that women have got, it's been in spite of religion. You know, getting to vote, getting access to healthcare, getting birth control, these things. This is all always opposite of what the religious people at the time want the woman to do. You just have to look at, you know, just go back 100 years. It's only been, 110 years since a woman could vote?
I think it was like 1928.
Oh, so it's even, maybe not even 100 years? And I thought it was just over 100?
You know the Archimedes story, don't you? About the works that he had, that he did. It was some sort of mathematics. I don't exactly remember what it was, but a bunch of monks found the paper and said, ooh, paper. Completely wiped it off and wrote a bunch of religious stuff on it. And it was rediscovered a long time later. We used our new methods to find what was written on it, and it had a lot of stuff to do with a lot of mathematical things that weren't discovered until hundreds of years later. And like you said, where would we be with that? You know, the dark ages, where would we be if it hadn't been for that? Again, it goes back to the harm that religion has done to society.
Yeah. I mean, even if you look at how, like, we had this lull in Christianity and then we kind of came out 500 years ago and started to make progress. Unfortunately, Islam did the absolute kind of opposite, is that they had this wonderful flourishing of religion, of science and all these concepts and stuff. And they were learning. I mean, that's why algebra and arithmetic, all these things are Islamic based, you know. But then they went and they've stayed down for the last 1,000. We had 1,000 until 500 years ago. They're still kind of over here with this suppression. They're getting there in some of the countries, but still, it frustrates me every day when I hear anybody complaining about modernism as if it's a bad thing. I'm like, the quicker we can get away from that type of thinking, the better, you know? So speaking of that, actually, I got a few questions here. As far as science in general goes, what is it that gets you up in the morning? As far as like, is there a particular field? Is it geology? Is it, you know, is it evolution? Is it physics? Is it cosmology? Like, what excites you the most?
I would say philosophy. I would say the idea that you should question everything. Why does this do this? Why do people think this, etc. I have often been stuck in my own head and thought a lot of crazy things and fought with the whole nihilism thing. Why, you know, if it's all gonna end someday, why is it worth living? Why is it worth doing this? Blah, 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 blah. It always has a happy ending. It's because we give ourselves our own reason for working up, because living is its own reward, etc., etc. And I think that that's part of the reason why I'm an atheist, because I've always just liked to think outside the box, think philosophically, and there is so much unknown and there's so much to discover. And it's worth it, you know, to get up and not just lay in bed all day, to go out there and find answers.
Yeah, and it's funny because I always think that I'm trying to better the world so that my daughter's generation will have a little less work to do and their kids will have a little less work to do. How will what we do in this generation make it better for the next person? So, you know what? Tell me about, I had not really come across that amazing atheist guy until I saw your link and I went and looked, you know, watched one of his videos and stuff. What's the detail
the
there?
Link.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm constantly getting, people are contacting me and they're like, oh, we can talk about Jesus or God is real because blah, 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 blah. Most of the time I'm getting the Kalam cosmological argument. Which, when I first heard it, I was kind of like, you know. But then I really examined it. And when you really get down to the brass tacks, it's actually really logically flawed. I'm not, like, connected with him in any way. On my personal account, we will talk from time to time. Just because I think he and I think very similarly. And I think maybe he recognizes that. I've just been a huge fan of him for probably over 10 years. He was somebody who really gave me a lot of hope. When I lived in that small town, I felt very alone. I felt like I was the only, you know, atheist or whatever else. And there was a lot of stuff that I wanted to say that I had been trying to say for a long time, but I couldn't. And he basically just thought the exact same way I did. You know, he said a lot of things that I liked, made a lot of good points, maybe, you know. And then he ran podcasts, too, that I was a fan of for a long time.
Is that the handle on his podcast, too? Is it?
Well, The Amazing Atheist, that's you know, his personal account. He ran a podcast from like 2014, 2013 or something until like 2017 called The Drunken Peasants.
Okay, I need to look that up. That sounds like it could be fun.
Yeah, you'd like it. He does a podcast now called Deep Fat Fried. It's not in the same format as it used to be. It's kind of changed and evolved over time.
The other person I found recently, I guess through The Line, was the Forrest Valkar guy
Guy. Yep.
He's just so knowledgeable, and I love when someone is just so dedicated to their field. I know a decent bit about biological sciences, and I have a biology A level from back in the UK and stuff. But like, I still would be the first to admit that because I know enough, I realize how much I actually don't know. You're probably not old enough to remember, but there is a, you know, Jay Leno. You've heard of Jay Leno,
right? Yeah.
He had a thing called Jaywalking.
Jaywalking,
did you ever watch
it? I did, yeah.
Okay, so it's simultaneously amazing to show how little people know, but it's also incredibly disheartening to learn just how little people know.
Some people don't even know the name of the country they're in. What country are you in right now? You know, they don't know the name of the state. They don't know the name of the country. I can't remember like any specific examples, but I think that was one. It was like, you know, it was like point to where the United States is on a map or something. And then they point like over to Korea. Now, I'm imagining that's probably like the worst of the worst. They probably edited that, you know, they probably talked to hundreds of people that day or dozens or whatever. But still, the fact that anybody like that exists, you know, a normally thinking person exists like that, doesn't know where the U.S. is on a map is a big problem. And it's not an isolated thing either. And most of these people, if not all of them, believe in God. I don't want to go and, you know, find actual evidence and reason for why things exist. I'll just say that God did it and be done with it. You know, the God of gaps. It's very easy. And I think that's why a lot of people like to believe, because they're so ignorant of exactly how everything works that they just say, oh, I don't really know how that works, but it's beyond me. It's probably just a more intelligent mind somewhere, I don't know, beyond the clouds or in a different dimension or whatever the hell, that is controlling it and made it that way.
You made me think of something, which was, I've sort of said this in the past, that is, if you were able to somehow not teach any child religion until the age of probably 12, it would probably reduce the amount of religion on the planet by 90%. You know, like, I feel like you and I were very lucky to have a reasonably secular upbringing. Like, even in my house, having an atheist dad and a sort of wishy-washy belief mum, and still going, me being made to go to church as a kid and all that, I still had enough interaction with religion for it to obviously influence me in some ways, right? Like, I can still remember a couple of hymns that we used to sing in church because it was sung so much. It was the ones that they knew kids would latch on to, right? There was a song called "Father, I Place Into Your Hands the Things That I Can't Do," or whatever. Like, it would be, "Father, I place into your hands the things that I can't do." Like, I can remember that in my head like it was yesterday, and it was 35 years ago, you know? And I'm like, even with as secular and as atheistic as my upbringing was, there was still always those spatterings, right? Enough that some people might latch onto. But if you're like my kids, they don't know anything about, they might have heard the word Jesus. They know that there is a word, God, and they know the concept in general, but they have no idea what any of those concepts are. And it doesn't come up in conversation. Like, have you read Penn Jillette's book? Because if you haven't, you would absolutely love it. It's called "Why I'm an Atheist and Other Magical Tales."
It sounds familiar, but I don't think that I've ever picked it up.
So I don't know if you've ever watched their show. It was called Penn and Teller Bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're in for a treat. I'm glad I'm able to vice versa share, because you gave me the amazing atheist guy. Go on YouTube, Penn and Teller Bullshit, okay? And it's basically, they just debunk a different topic every week for a while. I think it was in the late 90s, early 2000s, something like that. But his book that he wrote was just talking about him being like a parent as an atheist. And he was like, there's no such thing as an atheist parent. It's just parenting. You just don't, nothing comes up. Like, you do, when somebody sneezes, you don't say bless you. When somebody, you don't invoke any of the terminology. It just doesn't come up. And that's just what it's like in our household. You know, the only time somebody says bless you in our house is if somebody else is in the house and somebody sneezes and doesn't realize that we don't say it.
Yeah, sorry. It seems like you were even grew up in an even less religious circle than I did. I'll say bless you, whatever. It's just because it's so intertwined within our culture that it's hard to drop things like that. It seems rude not to say it. You know what I mean?
I know that I made a conscious choice on that, by the way. Obviously everybody around me at home and stuff would still say it. I just made a conscious choice. Is like, you can't really change these things unless you change these things. It's how I thought about it, right? Like, I just don't say bless you. When my daughter sneezes, everybody in our house just goes about what they're doing. You know what I mean? I know that's a small example and it's not important, but it makes a point about tradition and things like that. Like, we were at the Thanksgiving table the other day with my family, and it's my wife's side of the family. So I don't have any of my family there other than my family that I've made, like my daughters and my wife. They were talking about traditional dishes and traditional this and traditional that. And I was like, I don't think there's any real harm in traditional food dishes and traditional this and that. But, you know, I don't celebrate Christmas. I just do Christmas. There's a big difference there, right? I think I don't mind getting together and calling it a Christmas time. I don't mind saying the word Christmas or anything, but I'm not celebrating it in any way. It's just, oh, it's a week off from school. It's time to hang out with the family. It's time to open presents and give people things and have a good time. In no way can that not just be 100% secular like it is in my house. You know what I mean? But the terminology still kind of drags over. But how many people do you know that are actually celebrating Christmas? And it's not just the modern idea of Christmas, which is gathering, a dinner, gifts, and some games, essentially.
You know, Christmas, you know, actually has pretty secular origins. And people will say, well, Christ is right there in the name. Well, Thor is in Thursday. You know what I mean? The fact that something has a word in it doesn't change the fact that it doesn't actually celebrate that thing. We were talking about bless you and whatever earlier. I mean, I will make an effort to actually kind of make a joke out of it a little bit. Like if I burp or something, I'll say bless me. Or, you know what I mean? It's not to like poke fun, or maybe it is a little bit. I don't know. And you know, you mentioned Christmas. I mean, yeah, nobody. I can't think of anybody who actually celebrates it that way. I mean, even the most religious people I know don't actually say God for this food that we have on the table today or whatever. But it's not like in an actual extremely traditional way or anything like that. And I don't even really know if there actually is a traditional thing that exists for Christmas, because it has very secular origins when you really look at the history.
So you may be thinking of something else I'd like to ask you, because you were talking about how philosophy interests you, right? And the whole philosophy of these concepts and theology and this. And so for me personally, the word I hate the most that's associated with religion is the word blessed.
Yeah.
And I mean blessed in the sense of people actually think there are some people who are blessed and some people who are not. Or some people that sometimes are, some people that are sometimes not. From the most immensely important things to the most mundane find my car keys type things. Do you get what I'm saying? And I just wondered,
I do.
Have you ever thought about that? Because I think about the word blessed all the time. And anytime I hear anybody say, like, I'm so blessed, I just think Ethiopian kids or people struggling to put food on the table for their kids because they have to work a 70-hour week and they still don't make enough for a one-bedroom apartment or whatever. That's what I hear when I hear the word blessed. I hear God picking favorites.
In a lot of ways, he does. Look at the Bible, the Jewish people, God's favorite people, the chosen people, whatever else. And I mean, according to their own dogma, that he does. But that's not what an all-knowing, all-caring, all-loving God would do. He wouldn't pick favorites. He would say, I love all my creation equally. You love both your daughters the exact same, which means you're astronomically better than God is.
Yeah.
Because you don't pick favorites.
Plus, I wouldn't sacrifice either of them for a dumb reason. Because
right.
My God told me to.
Because the rules that you created.
Yeah, it's not the. That's obviously, that's a good point actually about going back to the Bible and the Abraham story. Is it's not the point that God stopped them at the last second. It's the fact that he would have thought, Abraham would have even thought that a loving God would ever ask that of him. You see, it's not that he would stop them and people go, oh, but he stopped them. He never planned on having him go through with it. I'm like, both of those two must be fucking traumatized for life. The dad who thought he was about to kill his own son, and the son who was like, this motherfucker is going to kill me here, right? I think about what that did to that. I mean, I know it never actually happened, almost certainly never happened, but the dynamic of the story, if we're being honest about it, just think about the rest of their lives that they led, right? And how you would choose. I mean, if any God that I, even if I knew that God exists, that Yahweh was real right now, and he came down and said, look, I'm sorry, but I'm telling you, you better kill your daughter or else, I would say, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Have you heard the famous interview with Stephen Fry?
Yeah, when he talks about bone cancer in children and says,
yes.
How dare you create such a fucked up world, et cetera. Yeah. And he's absolutely right. Yeah. If a guy were demonstrated to me right now that he exists, obviously I would stop being an atheist. I would believe in God. But I wouldn't fucking worship him. He would have a lot to answer for.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that's another good point on worship. No God or entity, whatever word you want to use, that would create life like us would ever demand worship. Nothing worth worshiping would ever ask for it.
Yeah. Because respect or worship or whatever you want to say is earned, not given. Especially when it's basically begging for it. You go to heaven. What's it going to be? It's going to be a big worship fest for all eternity. That didn't sound like heaven to me. And I think that in a lot of ways, people kind of misinterpret what the Bible is saying about God. God is good because he created all of us and we get to live our own lives and whatever else. It's like, do you though? Think about all the rules that he's created for you. And then they say things like free will. Do you really have free will? If you say, I don't believe in God and I don't want to worship him or whatever, I guess technically in that moment you have the free will to do that, but you're going to go to hell and burn for all time. So do you really have a choice? If that God exists and you know he exists, do you really have a choice whether or not you worship him or not? Because if you do, then you get to go to heaven, which, like I just said, really isn't heaven. And if you don't, then you go to hell and burn for all time. How is that in any way actual free will? It's not.
Yeah, and there's loads of times in the Bible when God literally takes the free will away of people. Like Pontius Pilate, the Pharaoh. He takes these, literally makes them do things because he wants to, you know, show off or whatever it might be in the story. Have you ever looked into determinism? It's basically the extreme that everything is determined from start, and that there is, it's impossible that anything, not only that any other outcome will happen, but could happen anyway. So like the decision I'm making to say the words I've just said, there's no way I could have said anything different.
Yeah. So you're talking about like destiny or predestination or things being predetermined. I got you. Yeah. I think that idea is complete trash. I don't think that's in any way, because if something were to be predetermined, there would have to be somebody to determine it for you. Kind of reminds me of, you ever seen Men in Black 3?
Yes.
Yeah. You remember Griffin, I think was his name. He was the alien who could see all possible scenarios play out before they actually did. So I think it's probably more likely that if I make a decision, if I drop this water bottle, that it just did that versus different universe where I didn't just do that, or that I actually threw it across the room or whatever else. There's a way to look at it like that, or you could just say there's an infinite amount of possibilities where I threw it over there, I threw it over there, which I think is a lot more likely. The fact that I just dropped that water bottle, I don't think that was in any way predetermined.
Right.
And except by me, because I knew I was going to drop it.
Right. And if you expand that concept out, let's say in 10 minutes, we're done with the interview and you go to pick up the water bottle, right? Now, let's say you put your back out doing it. You're 22, so that's unlikely.
my back has its problems every now and then. It has its fair share of problems, so it's possible.
Well, so let's say you put your back out and you have to go take a trip to the doctor that wasn't planned. Okay?
Yeah.
Let's say on your way into the doctor, somebody sneezes on you and gives you some disease that you wouldn't have otherwise had. You have no protection against it, and you end up, you know, I'm being really worst case scenario here, dead, right? Or let's just make it a little less... Let's make it a little less serious. You get in the car and somebody rearranges you in the parking lot of the doctor's appointment. So now you've got all this other stuff to deal with, and your life has taken at least a few hours of a turn. See, I love how you're picking it up now to make sure.
See, you got me thinking. I was like, man, I don't want that to happen. I'm picking it up right now.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, so every little thing, even just the delay of you deciding to wait at a traffic light.
Yeah.
Affects, because think about every time you brake on a highway, it affects every single person on that highway behind you for miles.
Yeah.
Listen to Sam Harris's stuff about his experiments on free will. It's mind blowing.
I love Sam Harris. He's brilliant. I love most of his work. I don't know. I don't know really exactly know what the word for it is, but I've always just looked outside the box, and I've always, there have been times where I have actually like thought about, like, kind of examined the world and like how the brain is. You mentioned solipsism, for example. I've thought about that too. There was actually a period of time there where I would start to disassociate a little bit, because it would make me think really crazy things. Maybe this is all just a dream, or, you know, maybe I am just a brain of that, or maybe I can't demonstrate that everything around me exists, whatever. It actually made me really worry for a few months. And it took me a long time to break out of it. I was like, I came to the realization that even if I am just brain of that, or this is all a dream, whatever it is, it's still the situation that I'm presented with. And I can either make the best of it or the worst of it. And eventually it's going to end. Whether it's real or not is irrelevant, because it's a situation that I'm in right now. And I know at least that I'm real. I think, therefore, I am. And so I am still able to make my own decisions on the world, whether it's real or not.
Yeah, I always loved Christopher Hitchens's line about describing your life as a party, basically. Like, you're alive and you've got to experience, it's a big party and you're invited. But when you die, it's time for you to leave. And the only sad thing about that is that, you know, the party's going to continue without you. It's just nice to chat with somebody that's young, that lives in a reasonably, I mean, it's St. Louis, but it's still middle America. It's still fucking Bible Belt.
It's still Missouri, don't get me wrong. And
Yeah.
There are people, even though they may not be rednecks or whatever you want to call them, that exist around here, there are still evangelicals all around this area that, you know, even though they're the more uppity kind of evangelicals. I know I can give you, you know, a couple of examples about that. I think a lot of people my age or younger are kind of buying into this whole idea of religion less and less, which gives me hope too. I'm pretty rare to, you know, think the way I do and, you know, be interested in the topics that I am or whatever else. I'll say that. But there are a lot of people who are at least skeptical, where they, you know, they say, oh, like, do you believe in God? I'll be like, I don't know. It all kind of seems like bullshit to me. I don't think that we're ever going to see like the end of religion in our lifetimes, but it will eventually happen. We know that the world is becoming more rationalized and more secular. You know, you just look at the stats. So
yeah, definitely. And I mentioned on a podcast before about the book by Steven Pinker. It's called The Better Angels of Our Nature. And it actually also explains about how generally life quality of life and things like that also have gotten better, less murders per capita, things like that. I know that in this today's age of, you know, technology, we see everything happening that happens bad. But that's also a perception thing. Like, we had to have got up and actually watched the news 30 years ago to actually know what the hell was going on. So it had the perception of not being as bad. Well, good for you, Josh, man. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Yeah, you too.
Before we go, though, are you thinking of putting together a YouTube channel or anything like that, or reaching out to some of the guys that already do and ask and offering help, or like, what's your thoughts on your future for the next year?
Yeah, I have thought about putting together a YouTube channel. I probably have one. It's just super inactive, but you know, I definitely have thought about getting more invested in it. I think probably the biggest thing that I'm thinking about doing is maybe actually reaching out to the atheist community of Austin, seeing what can be done, because you don't have to be in Austin to be on, to do the show anymore. They do everything electronically now, because after COVID, they realized, you know, let's do this. Start off bad, but then eventually they kind of, you know, they found the groove. They found out how, you know, they could do it. And I don't think they've been back to the studio since. If not, maybe it'll just be a hobby for me or something. But yeah, no, I'll definitely keep in touch with you about that kind of stuff and see where I might go from there.
So yeah, man. Well, thank you very much, Josh, for being on today, man. That was fascinating. It's nice to have somebody that's younger than me for a change, and is doing, like, really thinking solidly about these things at a young age. I hope that continues.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward. Maybe we'll do it again in the future. So we'll figure that all out for sure. I had fun. All right. Appreciate it, Keith.
Thank you, man. We'll talk soon. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
See you later.
Bye for now.